Magical Mara Designs is proud to sponsor this episode of the WDW Review podcast. If you're looking for custom, comfortable Mickey and Minnie ears, check out our designs or send us a message at magicalmaradesigns.com.
Hello, this is the WDW Review, and I'm your host, Chris Malik. And I'm joined by a special guest co-host today, John Kroll. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you?
Doing good. John, I'm looking past you at your Christmas tree, and you were one of the guys that literally... Halloween was on its last legs, but before even Halloween was over, I saw Christmas at your house. So, true?
Yes, that's true. We typically do Christmas pretty early, but this year being 2020, we decided we really needed that joy in the house much earlier, so we put it up November 1st.
I saw November the 1st. It was in full Christmas display, so nice. Yep. All right, let's start this off. We got a good show today because we don't talk about this enough because, honestly, we don't have experience with this. This is going to be a Shanghai Disney trip report. And we really need to learn because it's on everyone's bucket list, but very few of us are going to actually ever get that trip. But before we talk about that, we just passed Thanksgiving. So I need to pit a few of these Thanksgiving foods against each other and see which ones you determine is better. You ready for this?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I'm ready. I love food.
The Thanksgiving Battle Royal here. Let's start off with an easy one. Roast turkey or ham?
I'm going to go with ham.
Ooh, interesting.
I like turkey. The turkey's usually pretty good, but I definitely lean towards the ham more.
All right. Baked potato or sweet potato?
Sweet potatoes. Especially with a little maple syrup on it, they're delicious.
Okay, that was my next question. Is it just straight up maple versus sweet potato versus baked, or you need this all the sweet and the marshmallows and everything like that?
Oh, I love the marshmallows on it too, yeah.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Pumpkin or pecan? The pie.
Pumpkin. Just, it's traditional, and I think any other time of year I'd probably go with pecan, but Thanksgiving I gotta have pumpkin.
Okay. Stuffing or green bean casserole?
Stuffing. I love stuffing.
Okay. Interesting. So, I mean, these are pretty much straight up right now. I don't know if anyone would have argued so far. Maybe the turkey one got people. Let's throw you in for a loop, okay? Let's say... the crescent rolls that you get from the container or like fresh baked bread from like your wife's kitchen?
I think I had to go with fresh baked bread. My wife and daughter really are good bakers, so they make some pretty good stuff.
Okay. Homemade gravy or canned gravy?
Homemade.
Last one.
Yeah.
This is important. Homemade cranberry sauce or the tube of cranberry sauce? Because some people love it. That's what they grew up with. So that's all they know. So that means Thanksgiving to them.
So I'm going to go neither on this one. Cranberry is my least favorite flavor in the world. So I know that may be a bit controversial, but I can't do it.
I don't know how controversial that is because a lot of people are like that. It's good like one time of the year. And then after that, people take a pass. What is the specialty item on the Kroll family Thanksgiving dinner? What do you guys do that no one else does?
You know, I don't know that we do a pretty traditional Thanksgiving dinner. We do follow the Snoop Dogg recipe for the turkey, which is really good. So the jive turkey recipe from Snoop is amazing.
Okay.
So that's one thing that we do.
Describe
other than that.
Hang on. Go back. Describe what that is.
Okay. So it's got a lot of herbs rubbed on the bird. And then, there's a lot of citrus involved as well. So there's orange and lemon. So you put that on the outside and then also shove it inside the bird too. So it adds a nice little bit of a citrus flavor to it and keeps it, it's just delicious.
How'd you come across
it? It's the best recipe.
Oh, you were on Martha Stewart's website one day?
Yeah. So the Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart relationship is a big thing in our household. Me and my wife love like 90s rap and hip hop.
Okay.
So that's how we came about that one.
He's got a picture. where he and Martha Stewart are doing a spoof of, like, the Ghost, where, like, Snoop's behind Martha Stewart as they're, like, kind of crafting pottery together, and, like, Patrick Swayze and whatnot. It's hysterical. So God love
it's an odd pairing, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a good recipe, though.
Let me ask you this, then. Where does Thanksgiving sit in the order of holidays for you? You got Halloween, you got Thanksgiving, you got Christmas, you got the 4th of July. Where does it sit? Important, okay, we can pass, or, like, no doubt about it, family gathering every year? Because I can't imagine it's past Christmas for you. So
no, Christmas is number one for me. Thanksgiving's definitely up there. It's probably second or third. I'd say there's a close tie between Thanksgiving and 4th of July. I love both those holidays. Thanksgiving, I think I would probably put ahead of 4th of July because, like you said, the family gatherings, watching the Lions lose every year.
I was going to say that.
Getting together with my dad and uncles and cousins and watching football is always fun.
You've had a lifetime of beatings on Thanksgiving, watching the Lions play the 11 o'clock, and it's not the 12 o'clock game, obviously, by you, but every year the Lions go out there, and this could be a great... Again, Lions. So
yep, yeah. Every year, it's without fail. So,
have you been to a Lions game at Thanksgiving time, John?
No, I used to have season tickets, but we never went on Thanksgiving because I was always helping getting food ready with my wife and stuff. Well, she does all the cooking, and I usually try to keep it away from her as much as possible.
Gotcha.
While she's cooking, but yeah. So I've never actually gone down for the Thanksgiving game.
Okay, so by now you've guessed John lives in Michigan. Right, so you used to be a Lions, so yeah, it makes sense. People are like, who goes to see the Lions? Well, that's why, the proximity factor. So, all right, let's jump to the show here because I'm dying to ask you a few questions. So, you have a Shanghai Disney trip report. So, I got to ask, what is a guy in Michigan? Why is he going to Shanghai Disney? Was it simply out of love for Disney? Was it work related, or how'd you find yourself over there? Because we all want to do it, but, like, that sticker cost, that like, puts us back a little bit, so.
Yeah, so, Chris, I work for GM in the automotive industry, so we had a lot of business over in China. So I ended up finding myself in a position where I was going to be heading over to China for 2 weeks for work last summer, or summer of 2019. So with 2 weeks there, one of the things I wanted to make sure I did as a Disney fan was try to make it to Disney, Shanghai Disneyland, because it was never somewhere I was going to be able to go with my family. Like I said, the travel time and cost is pretty extreme. So I was super excited when I found out I was going to be there over a weekend. And I was able to arrange my meeting schedule to be in Shanghai for meetings on Friday and Monday, which gave me the weekend in Shanghai. So I got to take advantage of that and go on a Sunday. So it was pretty awesome.
Awesome. So you work for GM, huh? So I've got this idea about a car that I have to talk to you about later on. So as everyone says, oh, God, no yeah. More of this idea. So look, I got my in, guys. I got a person that works directly for GM, so that's the in. Anyways, so your love of Disney prior to this trip, huge, like astronomical, or like, okay, no, I'm just there, so I have to see it? Or explain, like, your Disney connection, how that started.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're involved in several groups. You're involved in a running group, but you're involved in a bunch of Disney groups that I know of as well, too. So,
yeah, so I love Disney. I'd say I'm, you know, a pretty big fan. In general, when I was growing up, I never really went to Disney. We went to Disneyland one time when I was a kid, and that was for a day when we just happened to be out in the area. And then once our oldest daughter was born, we decided we were going to try to start planning a trip. So when she was about five, we went for the first time to Disney World and just fell in love with it. I mean, everything was so fun. We got there the first day at Magic Kingdom at 7 a.m. We rope-dropped and stayed through the fireworks at night. So it was a super long day, but the kids did great. It was so fun. We were watching the fireworks, and I had my daughter on my back. And, you know, looking back at those pictures and stuff, it just made it all come together for me. And it's interesting because my wife and I had gone, we lived in Tampa or St. Petersburg for a year after college, and we went to Disney World for my birthday in 2004. And we just walked around, and I was like, oh, this is okay. And then we left. But going back there with kids and seeing how they experienced it and everything just made me fall in love with it. And then from there, it just spiraled, and we started going a couple times a year. And now, you know, we're DVC members as well. So we take full advantage of using our points plus some every year.
Okay, so how did you jump into that first trip then? Because the person that goes in college, walks around and goes on a few attractions, then leaves, to actually convince yourself to go to the family vacation there, that's an interesting and bold step. Because, I mean, you're whole hog at that point. I mean, you know the money's getting up there, and you're like, okay, am I going to have enough fun? Or was that Disney trip just like a portion of it was Disney, and you were doing other things in Florida?
So it was one of those things where we felt we had to do it. You know, we had to give our kids that experience. We felt like it was one of those milestones that we just had to hit, right? So we went down there, we did a lot of planning, and it was fun. Like as the planning process went along, my excitement was starting to build about it. So by the time we got down there, I was pretty pumped and ready to go. We'd watched a lot of YouTube videos and stuff, knew kind of what to expect. So we were pretty excited even heading down there. But we also, while we were down there, went to a couple different areas too. We went over to Clearwater and went over by St. Petersburg in that area for a day. Went to visit the Tigers in Lakeland. So we saw spring training. And that was one of the things that I've just wanted to do my whole life too, because I grew up a Tigers fan. Mm-hmm. So it was – Disney was the bulk of the trip. But there were some other side trips we did as well.
Nice. When we're off the air, I've got to ask you your favorite beaches in St. Petersburg, Clearwater, for my own selfish personal reasons, and things to do in St. Petersburg for my own selfish personal reasons. So we'll talk about that later on. So,
okay. Sounds good.
But outstanding. So you've got your kids down there, and she was 5 years old, John, correct, at that first trip? So
yep.
There's no rise that she's not going on that she really doesn't want. I mean, she's not going on, obviously, you know, Space and Splash and whatnot, but everything else is designed for family attractions. Which was the one that you think left the most memorable impression on your 5-year-old from that first trip?
So, honestly, I think it was probably either Dumbo or Aladdin ride.
Okay.
Just, you know, a simple, it spins around, and we have some good pictures of us, of me and my wife holding Kara when she was, you know, she was 5, and then my son was 2. So they were able to go on them. It was just fun.
Nice.
You know, they're not the most exciting rides, but we still have a soft spot for the Aladdin ride because of that. And the same thing with Dumbo.
How about Small World? Did Small World catch their imagination? Yeah. Did it catch them? I mean, I have massive memories of my youngest one being extremely tired and just about there, just done. And then we went to Small World, and like all of a sudden it was like this jolt of like childlike energy that just carried her for a few hours. So where did Small World rank for you guys?
So Small World wasn't that memorable for us on that first trip. We do have a funny memory about we went down for our 10-year anniversary with the kids, and my wife happened to have a migraine that day, and we were on Small World, and we had, God, you know, you're seated in the boat with other families, right?
Yeah.
And you just hear that song going over and over again. And the kids behind us, I mean, they're just cute little kids, right? But they're yelling, "Look, Mama, it's China!" And just screaming at every country we went by. So it holds a special place in my heart because of that, because it was definitely one of those experiences where we got off, and it was rough for Katie. But looking back on it, it was funny, you know.
She
later.
Just wanted out. She just wanted out there.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, so it started there. Usually does. There's that one moment of time where it solidifies, it crystallizes, and you have that memory. And all of a sudden, bam, the veil just drops and becomes something that's part of your fabric because you know it means something to your family. So you've now been to Walt Disney World. And have you been to Disneyland as a family yet, John?
No. We went when we only had one child. So when our oldest daughter was 2, we went out there because my wife's family, a lot of them live in San Clemente, out in California. So we went out there to visit them and drove up to Disneyland one day. So we haven't done a full trip out there. We're trying to figure that out, hopefully go in the next year or two.
Have you seen Cars Land since that opened up?
No.
Okay. I tell everybody, like I'm a preacher into the world of Cars Land, but you've not seen anything as magnificent as Cars Land at nighttime. So when you see Radiator Springs lit up at nighttime, oh, John, it's amazing. So I was a non-believer until I went out there, and then I booked a trip like 6 months later to go up again with my family. It's amazing. So it has to be a destination for you. So
yeah, it looks awesome. We really want to make it out there. It's one of those places that we haven't gone that we really need to go.
Fabulous. So you're now in Shanghai. You've finagled your work schedule to fill your Disney passion there. So you're in on Sunday at Shanghai Disney. So what was your expectations? Have you researched it, or were you just going in cold? You were like, okay, whatever it's going to be. I'm just going to enjoy.
Yeah. So I did do some research beforehand. I didn't want to do a ton because I kind of wanted to just experience it as it is and walk around. And I was by myself too, which helped because I could, you know, it, on a whim, I could go do any different activity I wanted to within the park that day. So basically I looked into what I needed to do to get my tickets, you know, some of the governmental stuff in terms of making sure I had my passport entered when I bought the ticket, that type of stuff. And then, you know, I looked at the ride I wanted to go on and had a plan of kind of where I wanted to go. But beyond that, it was one of those things where I was just open to experience whatever came about that day.
Gotcha. Did you feel at all like different or funny that you were there as just a dad or a guy amongst, I guess I should ask this. Was it mostly families? Was it individuals? Like, describe to me, because like in Walt Disney World, we see pictures constantly of families, but we see pictures of couples and we see pictures of people just blogging and vlogging by themselves, and nothing seems out of the ordinary. Everything seems absolutely completely normal. If you saw just a middle-aged dad walking around with a camera, you'd be like, yeah, okay, I've seen that 1,000 times before. So what was it like over there?
Yeah, so Shanghai Disneyland, it was mostly young couples with like one young child. So it wasn't the larger families like you'll see at Walt Disney World, because most of the families in Shanghai still only have one, maybe two kids now. Okay. But in general, it's a lot smaller families. So there was a lot less strollers. It was mostly parents walking around, either carrying a young child or with a young child and walking next to them. So there wasn't a lot of the big strollers and stuff going on. So it was a very different experience. Than being at Walt Disney World. And the crowds were a lot lighter as well, which was very nice.
As an American, did you feel that you were ever at a disadvantage for what was like the language prevalent and you understood what you were ordering and what you were going on and where you were going into the park and where this queue began? Or did you have to ask people for help?
So there was not a lot of people speaking English in the park, either the guests in the park or the cast members. So that was a bit of a challenge that sometimes trying to find where a restaurant was or where a bathroom was, that type of thing, was tricky. And it was part of the fun experience of it, was being completely isolated in this place where I looked different than almost everyone. I think throughout the day, I probably saw 10 to 20 Westerners, and that was about it for in the 14 hours or so I was there. So it was definitely a unique experience being someone in a place like that where you see things that make you feel like you're at home almost, because a lot of the stuff looks similar to Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
But then, you know, at the base level, everything is so different because the culture is completely different. There was not a lot of English in terms of spoken or signage. So it was a lot of using my Google Translate app to try to scan things and see what it said.
Nice.
So that definitely presented some problems, but honestly, I think it made it more fun.
Okay. So you say that as the single guy walking around, but as a family, it might have been more stressful if your kids are asking for the bathroom. You're like, hang on, wait a minute. I think it's, you know, but I get that. We felt that way even at Disneyland, that it's like, wait a minute, this is bizarro Walt Disney World. You know, that doesn't belong there. And you start pointing things out. And at Disneyland Paris is the same thing, but they have like three different languages on most signs, being like, oh, this is the French version, this is the, you know, the Mandarin, and this is the, you know, the English version of it. So you always felt like you knew where things were, but there was no language barrier. Everybody, it seemed, in Disneyland Paris spoke English as their second language, obviously, but never was there a person that had a difficulty of conversing with you. Did you find, you said most cast members didn't speak English, did you find though that if you communicated, did you just show your screen for the Google Translate, or how did you communicate with people?
Most of the time I would just show them, I'd type a word in English and show them the Chinese word. And in most cases they were able to resolve it. In a few cases, we weren't able to figure out what I was asking for. So they were always able to find somebody who did speak English though, at least well enough to answer my question or help me out. So it wasn't bad. But like you said, it would have been a lot more stressful if I had my four kids and wife with me, than just a guy walking around by myself.
Okay. So the question that I glossed past that now I really want to know more about is the transportation to the park. Because oftentimes in places like this, I mean, you've got to arrange that. That's almost as stressful as the day itself. And I mean, in Paris, I'm buying 5 bus tickets and I'm hoping to know where the bus drops me off and picks me back up from. How'd you get from your location to Shanghai? Was it right off this, their train stop? Was it right off their public transportation? Where was it?
So I was staying in Pudong. It was about 20-minute drive away from Shanghai Disneyland. So I ended up taking a taxi from my hotel which the concierge at our hotel helped me set that up. So they called the taxi. I just went outside the hotel, showed the guy on my phone where I wanted to go, and he dropped me off there. So it was extremely smooth in the morning. So it was not bad at all, to be honest. I was a little bit nervous about it because this was the first time on that trip I was venturing out by myself anywhere in the city, or in the country for that matter. And so I was a little nervous about that, but once I got there, I felt great. You know, like I said, the people were very helpful when they could be, or they tried to help. There was really well-organized taxi queues and stuff. So it really wasn't a bad experience at all. And I would definitely take a cab again if I had to, if I was there. There are some metro lines that they have that go from, say, from the airport to Shanghai Disneyland and around the city. And I heard those are easy to use, but my anxiety level was a little bit too high to try to do that on my own.
Yeah, to navigate that, the extra stops, do I get off here, do I get off there, as opposed to get in car, get out of car, you've arrived. So,
and right.
On the way back, there's taxi queues right there by the exit, and you just found a taxi driver, showed them where you had to go, bam, no problem, easy peasy?
Yeah, no problem at all. They had people directing everyone to the taxi queues, so even a lot of the locals were in line for the taxi queue. And when I walked up, I was like, oh man, this is going to take forever. Right? It was a long line. It went by in about 10, 15 minutes. Okay. They just had taxis lined up. They'd pull up to a spot. People would jump in, and the taxi would pull off. So it was extremely smooth, very well organized, and very easy to get out. And there wasn't the traffic you have getting out either.
Okay. Is it mean of me that I was hoping for a story about John Kroll stuck in the Chinese countryside, completely lost as a foreigner, with this one Google app with like 9% battery life, thinking this is going to end up just terrible. This is going to end up just disastrous. So,
and that's what my concern was too, Chris. So. But no, it was one of the better experiences I've had leaving a Disney park. It was, everything was orderly. Everyone was calm, and it went really well.
Cool. All right. So your first impression as you walk in, you're obviously comparing it to what you know, right? You see Cinderella's castle. It's magnificent. You've seen Sleeping Beauty's castle back when you were in California, and you're thinking, okay, I only have one point of reference. When you walk in, what's the first thing you see, or what was your expectations, that it was going to be just as good? You were accepting it maybe slightly worse. You were hoping for what'd you see, and what did you expect?
So I didn't have a lot of expectations going in terms of it being better or worse than Disney World. I was kind of treating it as something different, right? Because I didn't want to hold it up to the level I hold Disney World to. And so with, you know, taking some of that expectation out, I walked in and I was very pleasantly surprised with everything. They had a cool train station right when you walk in. And then once you get past that, the castle is monstrous. It's huge. It's an awesome castle. And it looks similar from all sides, and it's just ginormous right in the middle of the park, right? So it was really cool walking in, and you walk up Mickey Avenue, which is kind of like our main street. And you can see this giant castle, and it looked just awesome. I loved it. I was kind of in awe when I first walked in, almost like I am every time I walk into the Magic Kingdom. But yeah, it was a pretty cool experience walking in and just seeing this huge beast of a castle, and it's just beautiful.
Gotcha. So describe for us then, you walk up Main Street. Is it designed like Main Street in Walt Disney World, like emporiums, shops, restaurants, or what does their Main Street look like as it approaches the castle? What's there?
It's smaller than ours, right? But it's similar. It has some shops. There's like a Disney, kind of like the Emporium, but much smaller on the corner. So it's a little bit shorter than our Main Street. The way when you walk in, you go up that Mickey Avenue, and then you come up to this giant garden area. That's really cool. They have kind of the Chinese, the animals, the Chinese zodiac, and they have these mosaic tile things that show you all of those. And there's some nice areas to sit and relax. And behind that is where the castle comes up. So walking up Mickey Avenue, you see the garden area, which is kind of their central hub. And then behind that is the giant castle.
Nice. To the left and to the right of that spot, are there access points to different lands as you go along? Is it Adventureland? Is it Tomorrowland? Is it Frontierland? Describe what's going on in both directions and as you approach the castle.
Okay, so as you're coming up and walking around the Gardens of Imagination, you can go off to the left and go to Tomorrowland, and then kind of behind the castle, there's Fantasyland. And then over to the right, you have Adventure Isle and Treasure Cove. And then all of those lands, it's not as hub and spokish as Walt Disney World. You can get to each land from the other one. Okay. More so, you don't have to come back to the center as much as you do at Walt Disney World. But it's very cool the way. So when you walk to the left and you go up to towards Fantasyland, I'm sorry, Tomorrowland, mm-hmm. you see the Tron coaster, and it just looks amazing. It's so fun. So you walk over to their Fantasyland and you see that, and there's Stitch's Encounter. So there's those areas that are just, Tron looks amazing. It's so futuristic and it looks awesome. And that's one of the first rides I went on when I got in the park.
Okay. Did you have some kind of fast pass system over there, John, or was it just get in line queue or like paper fast pass, or did they have, obviously they didn't have magic bands, but what do they have for, or do they have anything?
Yeah. So they do have a fast pass system. You do it through your phone. You have to be inside the gates of the park to do it. And one of the things that they have over there that I actually liked was you could buy something called Premier Access Pass, where you pay a fee and then you get fast passes to a certain group of rides. So they have different groups up based on what rides you want to go on that you can purchase, and you get fast passes to all the rides in that group. So when I got into the park, I bought the Premier Access Pass so that I could get on pretty much all the rides. And then you can also buy individual rides. So their Premier Access, I want to say it was around $50 US. And then you could buy individual ride fast passes for say $8 to $10 US. So it was not cheap, but being by myself, it was one of those things where I wanted to accomplish everything I could that day. And you know, spending a little bit of money like that for myself wasn't bad. I was probably the only time in my life I'll be able to be there. I mean, I'd love to go back, but you know, realistically, I'm thinking I'm probably not going to have this chance again. Right. So I want to take full advantage of everything.
Understood. If you bought an individual ticket, did it have a time stamp on it, or it was valid all day long? Whenever you wanted to go, you were allowed to go.
Yeah, so that's another interesting thing that they had, was when you buy that pass, you don't have to go at a certain time. You just show up, scan your phone, and they put you on the ride. So it was kind of nice in that manner, because I didn't have to worry about it too much.
Every park seems to have a variation of what the other parks have, but also like a throwback, like in this particular situation. Okay, so we have a Fast Pass. It kind of sounds like Max Pass from Disneyland, but it actually sounds like the ticket book they used to have of an A and a B and a C, and you'd pay per attraction, no time limit, you know, unlike our old paper ticket, which said, oh, come back between 11:05 and 11:55. Here, it was valid all day long. So it's a kind of a variation between a bunch of different systems that made it work. So was there ever a point you got in a line? You never purchased an individual ticket, right? You just purchased the Premier Pass for everything, correct?
I did buy the individual tickets too, yeah. So I bought the Premier Pass, and then I also bought passes to the Crystal Grotto and a couple of the other rides that weren't included in my group that I wanted to do.
Okay.
Because I just didn't want to have to worry about standing in line. It was one of those things where I didn't want to waste time standing around. So if I could pay money to get on a ride quicker, $10, and I'd do it. Because like I said, I just wanted to take full advantage of everything.
You got one day, and you're in, you know, Shanghai, yep. Disneyland, and you're not coming back anytime soon. Yeah. So I completely understand.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So your experience in the Tron coaster, and, you know, they're building it right now at Walt Disney World. We're seeing the cover go on, and the progress is taking place. And, of course, we've seen pictures, and it looks awesome. It looks futuristic. But your experience there, did you watch any YouTube videos prior to that, or did you just went on the ride cold?
No. Yeah, I just went on it. I didn't want to know what was going to happen, so I just decided I'm not going to look at what happens, because that was the ride I was most excited about. So I just wanted to experience it fresh without having any preconceived notions about it. So I went on that ride first, and I loved it. I was a little bit worried about I'm a little bit claustrophobic in the way they strap you in, because you lay down on the bike, and then they have a pad come and push against your back, right? So you're pretty well locked in there. And then it just takes off, and it's amazing. It's such a fun ride. I ended up going on
0 to 10. Describe it. No, well, give me a rating. 0 to 10 on the Tron coaster.
I'm gonna give it a 9.
Wow.
Okay. It's one of my. There's one other ride at Shanghai Disneyland that I absolutely loved as well. And those two are probably my favorite two rides globally of any any attraction at any park I've ever been in.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll get to that other ride. You tell me about it later on as we go along, unless I happen to mention it as we go along.
Okay.
So you're off of Tron. Were there attractions that were exactly like they have over at Walt Disney World, meaning Aladdin and the Jungle Cruise and Splash Mountain and whatnot? Were there exact duplicates over there?
There were, yeah. Peter Pan's flight was very similar to what we have over here. I felt like it was a little bit smoother of a ride, maybe just because it was newer, but it was almost exactly the same as what we have here. And then one of the other ones that was pretty much the same was Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. So that ride was very similar, if not exactly the same, to what we have at Disney World.
Okay. How about things like Jungle Cruise? Do they even have Jungle Cruises, Splash Mountains, Space Mountains, Haunted Mansions? Do they have that over there?
No, so there wasn't any of those rides. They did have, like, Winnie the Pooh was there. That was very similar, which that one was a cool experience, too, because everything was written in Chinese as you're walking up. So it was just neat. And then seeing the characters speak in Chinese, there really wasn't – Mine Ride was the same. I'm trying to think of other rides that are the same as what we have here. They had a buzz.
Hang on. I want to freeze you. Did Winnie the Pooh sound the same in terms of tone of voice? And like Tigger, did they sound the same even though they're speaking in Chinese? Like
they did, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Where it was different, like, you know, on say Pirates of the Caribbean, that was really weird seeing Captain Jack Sparrow speak in Chinese. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because they made him, the character, look more more Chinese than say Captain Jack would look at Walt Disney World. Okay. But yeah, when he opens his mouth and you hear Chinese come out, it's definitely a little bit of a shock at first.
For sure. I don't laugh to make fun. I laugh to think, man, all of a sudden it's like your brain is trying to comprehend. It's like, no, that's not. Yeah, he is saying that, but he's not. I don't understand it. So what was it like, the Pirates ride? Was it something amazing, or was it less than the version at Walt Disney World? Because through experience, John, the Walt Disney World version is the least exciting version I've ever been on. Disneyland blows it away, and Disneyland Paris, it blows that away. So like the Walt Disney World version of Pirates, I love Pirates, but it's the least exciting version there is.
Yeah, the version in Shanghai is absolutely amazing. It's completely different than what we have here. And they use these giant screens, and it feels so realistic as you're moving through the water and everything. That is probably my favorite ride I've ever been on of any type.
Oh, my gosh.
Is their version of Pirates. It's just, it was so awesome. And the best part of it was the wait for it was about 10 minutes. So I went on it multiple times, and I bought the pass because I just, like I said earlier, I just didn't know what the wait times were going to be, right? And then I walked off the ride and looked at the wait time, and it was 10 minutes. So I went back on it again immediately. And then later in the day, I went back on it a third time, and it's so fun.
Okay. So now you've got me really excited. I mean, and Shanghai is going to be a fortune for a family of my size. I mean, we got five in our family. You've got more than that. So I mean, that's why I know we're probably not getting there anytime soon. But the way that they've envisioned and created Pirates in other parks, you know, it almost makes the trip worth it in its own. I'm telling you, if you ever get to Disneyland Paris, it will change your perception of what Pirates should be. It is outstanding. Outstanding. So I'm glad to hear
that. That's definitely on the bucket list.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, Pirates is, it was so awesome. And then in that same area in Treasure Cove where they have the Pirates ride, they also have a Captain Jack Sparrow show where they have those giant fans on the ground that the actors will kind of float with the power of that fan. It's crazy the stunts they do.
Holy cow.
Stuff that you would never see in the U.S. I can't imagine it's super safe, but nobody must have got hurt. They keep doing it.
It has to be safe. Yeah. It has to be safe. Okay, we're going to go with that.
It was amazing, though. It was just so cool.
No Haunted Mansion or Phantom Manor or anything like that? No scary attraction along those lines?
Nope. No, didn't see any of that, which was kind of disappointing because I really like that at Walt Disney World. Although it scares my kids, so I don't get to go on it as often as I want.
Understood. Let's talk about food then for a moment. Did you find the food there was obviously geared towards the Chinese population, but for a Western palate, no issues with food, John? Nothing, no difficulty finding things? Or like, imagine you had a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old with you. Would they have a hard time finding food over at Shanghai?
You know, it was very interesting because they have some good sit-down restaurants there that that have a lot more cuisine skewed towards the Asian side or the Chinese side. Mm-hmm. Where I ended up going, I really wanted to go to the Tangled Tree Tavern, which is based off the Ugly Duckling from Tangled. And so, because it's my wife's favorite movie, so I was like, I have to go there. So I walked in there, and that place was really cool because they had the knives in the wall. Like somebody had thrown, there was fights, and people were throwing knives and axes at each other. Nice. And there I ended up with just a chicken and rice meal. So it was just white rice with half a chicken. So that it was fairly, I guess I'll call it normal food for an American. You were able to find stuff like that. And then for dinner, I went to their kind of downtown Disney area. And ended up at like a noodle shop and got some noodles and you know, a glass of wine, that type of thing. So it was pretty normal food compared to what I experienced in a lot of other parts of the country.
Okay. Did they ever have a spot where you felt like it was like overly Americanized? Did they have like a stand where they had hamburgers and hot dogs and popcorn or nothing along
no.
those lines? No. Okay.
Yeah. Nothing like that that I saw. I did have, there was a Piranha Wrap place, or I think it was called Piranha Wraps, where I got like just a typical chicken wrap, and that was probably the most American or Western thing I had there.
Okay, how about pop? Do they have pop in bottles? You know, soda in bottles? Do they have it? Is that even a thing, or was it like, you know, largely bottled water or coffee or tea? What do they have to drink?
Yeah, so mostly I drank mostly water while I was there. I don't even remember if they had normal like pop or soda or whatever. You know, when I was at the noodle place, they had beer and wine and normal, I guess I'll call it, you know, American type drinks. So at that place, they probably did have like Coca-Cola and Pepsi and stuff. But when I was walking around the park, I didn't see a lot of those little carts selling, you know, bottles of pop.
Ooh,
like you could see at Disney World.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of bottled water. A lot of like ice cream stands. So like the Mickey shape, they had the Mickey shaped ice cream bars, but there, the one thing that really stood out to me was I took a bite of it and I was surprised because it was a mix of chocolate and vanilla. It wasn't just the vanilla ice cream. So that was kind of a nice little surprise.
Wow.
Especially as someone who loves Mickey bars.
Let's talk about snacks then. Were the snacks geared for the Chinese population, or was there, when you walk by, you know, I don't want to assume, you know, what do they have to offer? Hot, cold, frozen? What was it like? Savory, sweet?
Yeah. So they did have some sweet items, but their sweet items were much less sweet than what we would experience. So one of the things I got was a really cool purple churro. And I expected it to be more similar to the churros you'd get at Disney World, where it's very sweet. This one was, it didn't have a lot of taste, and there was, you could tell it was significantly less sweet or less sweet than what we would have.
Was it ube?
So it's one of those
was
things.
It an ube? Ube churro, John?
Ube?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay. So that is, they use that for pastries and stuff along those lines. So I'm probably wrong. Someone's going to correct me, but I always thought ube was, I've had it in a donut. It's like a variation of like a sweet potato type thing. I'm probably wrong, but that's why I always believe it. And they sweeten it, but it's not as sweet, but it's distinctive purple. So that's why I just assume as soon as you said purple, I assume.
No, this one was, it was like colored purple. It was like edible purple glitter almost.
I'm sorry.
So okay. It was really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, it looked awesome. And then it was the same thing. I had like an ice cream treat at one of the ice cream stands, and it was the same way. It was just way less sweet than what I would have expected.
How about popcorn? Was popcorn a big deal over there?
Honestly, I don't remember seeing like the popcorn buckets and stuff like we would have at Disney World.
Okay.
There was carts that had popcorn, but they didn't make as big of a deal out of it.
The reason I ask is in Tokyo Disneyland and Tokyo Disney Sea, when Jesus went down there, and they're huge with popcorn, and it's not one flavor. The popcorn stands have like 7 different flavors of popcorn, and they line up like 20, 30 people deep to get the popcorn. And like, that's what they want. They've got to have popcorn. Oh. So I just wondered if there was any, any carryover to that. So no, not really.
Yeah, no, nothing that I noticed. No.
Okay. What was the oddest food item you saw, either snack or sit down? Because I'm a pretty adventurous eater. You know, I'm a vegetarian, but that's not necessarily true. I do eat fish. So I'm a pescatarian. It's a crazy term,
yeah.
But I'll just about consume anything I can get my hands on. So I have no, like, okay, I'm not going to ever try that. That's disgusting. What was something that you saw that you were like, whoa, you know,
in the park, there really wasn't much that I was like, oh, I'm not eating that.
Okay.
But at the same time, I also wasn't really, I was looking for something more Americanized because I had been eating real Chinese food for the last week and a half at this point.
Gotcha.
So I was just ready and looking for, all right, whatever I can find that's the most.
I need some nachos. Like, what dogs. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if I could have found pizza, I probably would have just got a pizza.
Okay.
But no, I was really looking more for like the chicken and rice type thing, something that I could eat and know what I was eating and just get full off of.
So would you say then that it catered to the Chinese palate, but it was mainstream enough that anybody can go there and be pleased with what they were being.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think anybody could have found something there to eat.
Okay. You made a point about 30 seconds ago that I'm going to get back to right now. You said in the park? No. So that means there was something really bizarre you saw outside of the park to eat. Is this correct? Did you? Describe.
In China in general, the food is it can vary quite a bit by region. But yeah, I mean, some of the things, you know, pig brain, for example, when a waiter brings that out to the table, it's very odd. Okay. A lot of stuff I didn't know what it was. So I survived most of the week on mushrooms and rice.
Okay. So you
I'm not an adventurous eater.
Oh, that was my question, was would you eat it if they brought it or you had to go and find out before, you know, what it was? So, okay.
Yeah. So I typically would ask people to at least tell me what something was so I could kind of politely decline it if it was something I didn't like.
Gotcha.
One of my colleagues tricked me into eating goose liver at one point, right at the beginning of the trip. The waiter brought out a tray of what looked like candied cherries, like they had a glaze over it. And it was about the same size, right? And I asked him what it was. Is this cherries, fruit? And he says, yes. And then I took a bite and he just started laughing. Oh, and God. It tasted, it wasn't something that went well with my palate.
Gotcha. I could just imagine that. Brutal, yeah. Brutal. So
yeah.
Were you concerned at all then? Obviously, you're by yourself and you're there on business, but you're there for 2 weeks. Were you ever concerned about just logistical travel things like losing passport, not having enough money, getting sick, not knowing what to do when you get sick? You know, these are things that like filled my mind. We took a family trip last year to Paris and I was like, what do we do if we get this? What happens if we lose our, you know, and like paralyze yourself with fear of stuff like that. What was your concern for stuff along those lines?
So I wasn't overly worried about it because I'm there for work. GM has a pretty good global network of how to handle emergencies and stuff. So I wasn't too worried about that. From a logistical standpoint, my travel was set up for me for the most part. I did have one issue where I almost got left in an airport because my ticket wasn't found, and we were in a small airport up close to Beijing. It was interesting because nobody in the airport spoke English.
Oh no!
So I had my colleague with me who was trying to help translate. They wouldn't take my credit card. They couldn't find my ticket. So I ended up having my colleague bought me a separate flight, and so that was tricky because we almost missed our flight. But they were able to pay with his phone, and they were able to accept his money. But they couldn't take any of the American credit cards I had. So that was a bit stressful.
Was that a logistical issue, or they just decided they wouldn't do that, or why wouldn't they take the American credit card?
Their systems just couldn't accept Visa or American Express. So.
Okay.
It was, yeah.
That happens by me too, John. Where my golf course is at, we get travelers that come in from Japan all the time. And specifically the JAL, the Japan Airline credit card, I can guarantee you almost every time it won't go through. It gets denied. And the guy looks at you like you must be doing something wrong. So as soon as I see the JAL airline card come out, I'm like, sir, just so you know, we're probably not going to take this one because we don't take this one. It's not us. It's our credit card provider. So I wonder that, and you're stuck in some little airport by Beijing, the only white dude there. Oh my gosh. The anxiety level must have been about 20 at that point. So
it was, especially because we had to catch that flight so that we could get back for a meeting time later in the day. So if I would have missed that flight, then it throws off the whole rest of my schedule. Cause we were packed pretty tight schedule wise the whole trip. So it was interesting because we flew all over the East Coast of China and took some like high speed trains and stuff. So it was a really cool experience overall, but yeah, so that was really the only time I had any issue with travel or logistical problems, anything like that. Everything else was extremely smooth.
Okay, let's circle back to the park before we go here. So did you buy souvenirs before you left? And were the souvenirs generic, or were you hoping to see something that said Shanghai Disney and, you know, you bought that? What'd you buy? What'd you take home?
So that was one of my biggest disappointments. Was I was so excited to find, I love like Disney golf shirts and that type of thing. So I just wanted to find like a golf shirt that said Disney Shanghai or had Chinese writing on it. Really, they had a lot of generic t-shirts that had characters on them. They didn't have a lot of Shanghai specific gear or merchandise or anything. One of the things they did have that I ended up bringing home was they had a whole Duffy store. So Duffy was pretty big over there. And what my son has friends that are twins that love Duffy, and their mom mentioned that before I went. So I ended up getting them like a backpack and got my son like a stuffed Duffy bear. So that was cool to find. But yeah, everything else was, from a merchandise standpoint, was a little bit disappointing because I thought for sure I'd find something cool that had Disney Shanghai on it. And, you know, I'd be able to wear the golf shirt around work and, you know, I made fun of at work anyway for wearing Disney shirts pretty much every day. So that would have at least been another topic of conversation with my coworkers.
John, you can't go into the Emporium or Epcot or anything without, like, you could throw a stick and hit 100 items that say Walt Disney World with retro logo, new logo, whatever the color is. So I'm shocked to hear that. And even Disneyland is the same thing, too. So, okay.
And that's what I expected to see, too. But, yeah, it was very generic stuff.
Did you see consumers with tons of stuff, or what is the shopping experience like? Or did you feel like, okay, maybe it's because they don't buy merchandise, or like, what was that about?
There was a lot of people in the store, but I didn't see people walking out with huge bags like you do here. So there was a lot of people looking at things and touching and holding up like the stuffed animals and stuff. But I didn't notice a lot of people buying a ton of stuff like you would see, you know, in Florida or even at Disneyland. So that was, I don't know if it's just a cultural difference, but they didn't have a lot of the same stuff we would have here where people go nuts over it and buy a ton of it. It was definitely toned down quite a bit from what we see.
Man, I just think about people waiting in line like prior to opening of stores for like Vinylmations when they used to come out, and like people are waiting in line for the Joe Rohde ears and they're like $120 a pair and stuff. Over there, this doesn't exist, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it was very strange because one thing I thought for sure they would have a ton of. But one of the things too with Shanghai Disneyland only being, I think now it's 4 years old. At the time I was there, it had its third anniversary. So they were still focusing even some of the rides on educating the guests on what Disney is and some of the different characters and that type of thing. So I think part of it too is it's not as ingrained in their culture as it is here where they have people who are fanatical about it and that type of thing.
That's a great point. So that brings upon a further discussion, which we probably should have, upon, you know, just what's been allowed in Chinese society and what they've allowed the Western civilization to import themselves into China. So you're right. So that character, I mean, we recognize it immediately. It's as recognizable as the presidents of the United States. You know, that's Mickey. You know, that's Mickey. Yeah. You're exactly right there. So it just doesn't have that place in their heart. So understood. So after you've walked around the park and you're leaving, so this is going to be a very difficult thing for you to answer. Give me a Walt Disney World comparison. And I don't necessarily want to say better or worse, but I'm trying to get to that point. You know, was the experience the same? Did it feel as immersive? Did it feel less immersive? I know you're used to a certain kind of, did you feel like you got your money's worth? Would it be something, and is it only one park in Shanghai, or is there additional opportunities and additional places to go? I'm just trying to ascertain, you know, you got a family, you want to go on vacation, you want to see Shanghai Disney. What else after that one day? And is it just a one day park, or is there multiple days you can spend in that same park? Is it big enough?
I think if I would have had my kids with me and my family, I think it could be a 2 day park.
Okay.
I think, you know, being by myself, I was able to get through things much quicker. But if I had everybody with me, I would say 2 days and you could get it done with time to spare. But I think overall, I would say I got my money's worth and I would definitely go back. If I was in Shanghai again and I had an open day, I would for sure go back to the park. I wouldn't schedule a full family trip to Shanghai just for that.
Okay.
But being there and it wasn't overly expensive. I mean, I think the ticket to the park was probably around $80 or $90, so it was comparable, probably a little bit less than going to Walt Disney World in Florida. But it wasn't as immersive as Walt Disney World is. I think there was a lot of little touches maybe that were not there that are present in Disney World. But so as you walk around, like, it was awesome. It was a cool experience, but I didn't feel, I mean, this might be cliche, but I didn't feel as magical as I do at Magic Kingdom. Right. So, and I don't know if there's one thing I could pinpoint and say that's the reason why. I think it was just a bunch of little things added up. But overall, I would definitely say I got my money's worth, and I would for sure go back. And with some rides, like I mentioned, Tron and Pirates of the Caribbean, that are, I would go there just for those two rides if I could.
Is there a Disney complex then? Is there resorts? Is there another park? Is there a water park? Is there, you know, what else is there besides that? Or is that just it?
So there are two hotels there. One of them is a little bit nicer hotel, like a deluxe level. And then they have one that's more like a moderate level. And that was one thing I really wish I would have done while I was there, was at least go and check out those hotels, because they're very close. So it's not a sprawling city like Walt Disney World is. I mean, it's pretty much the park. They have a little shopping district, more similar probably to downtown Disney out in Disneyland, where it's, you know, a little bit smaller than, say, Disney Springs, huge and has a lot of bars and restaurants. So from that standpoint, it's more smaller and self-contained, I think, than Disney World is. But yeah, overall, they don't have all the water parks and everything. So it's more of, I think, a place that the locals go for one day.
My point, rather than, exactly. Yes, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a destination that many of us are going to go on vacation. It might be a trip as part of another trip if you really were splurging, but it won't be a place that we would bring our families to and say, we're going to Shanghai for 5 or 6 days. Well, I mean, we could. Obviously, Shanghai is probably just amazing, but as far as the Disney portion of that trip. So, okay, understood. Okay, so I got the same exact thing in Disneyland Paris. I got that when I saw Haunted Mansion cast members talking to cast members of other attractions. And like in Walt Disney World, you don't see that. They go down the corridors and, you know, the doors, and they're out of the way. They don't interact. It's just their self-contained stories. Over here, I got the guy talking on the ferry boat to the Haunted Mansion guy back and forth, and they're like yelling. And it's like, wait a minute, I don't want to see that. That's not right. So I wonder about that as well.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that I think adds to or takes away from a little bit of that magic, right? But like I said, overall, it's a very well-designed park. It's set up very well. The rides are super cool. It's just one of the cooler experiences I've had, partially because it was just such a different culture, right? And getting to experience that. Okay. So it was pretty awesome.
Did you stay at nighttime, John? Did you see the lights turn on?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did get to see their nighttime show. I was super excited about it. I'm thinking China, this is where all the fireworks are made. They're going to have a great fireworks show. So this was another one where I didn't look at it on YouTube. I didn't want to know what was coming. So that was one of the things that was a little bit disappointing, because I had hoped, and I'm trying to look at my notes real quick right now, but I had hoped that they would have a huge fireworks show with the castle projections and everything. They used a lot more like lasers and stuff. Some of the songs were in Chinese, which was really cool. And then they had some of the songs in English. So it was really cool. I would say that I probably, if I went back, I wouldn't stay at night to see the show. Mm. It just wasn't like, when I'm in Disney World, I have to see the fireworks every night. Like it's just a thing. I absolutely love it. It's my favorite thing to experience probably ever in my life is Happily Ever After. Okay. But their fireworks show and stuff, it was cool. I'm glad I did it, but I wouldn't stay again that late just to see that.
Okay, very good. And was the park as beautiful? Because that's where all the Disney parks shine, is at nighttime. As soon as all the lights, was it the same thing there, or was it illuminated differently at nighttime?
No, it was similar. Yeah, it was really cool the way they light everything up. They especially when you look at say like the Tron ride, it changes colors, and the way that whole facade on the outside is lit up, it just looks so futuristic and awesome. I would say that that Tomorrowland was my favorite place at night. Everything else was cool, but Tomorrowland, it completely changed the whole land at night. The way they light it and the colors they use and just everything was pretty awesome about that area.
Okay. So I know I've gone through all the questions I have. What did you experience that I haven't asked you that you want people to know about Shanghai? Like what is so important that I've forgotten? Do you take a look at your notes, because I'm sure I've forgotten to ask you something. I'm just trying to imagine my perspective. People, the way they dressed, the way that you dressed, is there a certain dress code to get into the park, things like that?
No, you know, everybody there was dressed, I'd say, pretty normally. Like, you would see people around here, you know, shorts and t-shirts and golf shirts, that type of thing. It wasn't, I didn't notice anything real different from that aspect. One thing I would say that really shocked me was the lack of English, right? Which I mentioned a little bit earlier. But the other thing that I found really fun was when you did see Western people, there was a lot of interaction with them. Everybody was happy to see somebody else that spoke their language, looked like them, dressed like that, you know, that type of thing. So it was pretty cool. I ended up running into a random couple that was from Pennsylvania, and ended up walking around with them for about a half hour, just talking, and nice having somebody to talk to. Because, I mean, I basically went the whole day without having anybody to interact with, because it was pretty much just, you know, these families, none of them spoke English, and I would sit next to them on the ride. And I'd look around and be all giggly and happy, and then we'd go our separate ways. Yeah. And it wasn't like where, you know, at Disney World, if I'm sitting next to somebody on a bus, we'll start talking about, you know, whatever, the weather, the shirt they're wearing, that type of thing. You know, and so I think I missed that a lot, and that may have taken away from some of the experience, but it also, I think, added to it in another way, where you get to experience something that I've never experienced before, being somebody completely different from everybody I'm around.
That's a great point. So people are going to have questions if they go to Shanghai, because there's not many things that can be a resource. So you're going to be a great resource for people. John, if someone's listening and they wanted to reach out to you, do you have a way they can contact you? Email, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram? What would be the best way someone could ask you a question?
Yeah, I would say if anybody wants to ask me questions about Shanghai or anything, find me in the EDCOT group. That's probably the best place to reach me on Facebook. I have Instagram, but I don't use it as much. So I think Facebook's probably the best place to reach out.
Gotcha. So John mentioned it. So we have a group, and I like to say it's a group of listeners, but it's not. It's a group of friends. It's people that have similar Disney interests and are about as wacky as you get. So it's our group. It's called EDCOT, E-D-C-O-T. John's there. My co-host are there. Hundreds of people are there and could be a resource for pretty much every park and every question you might have. And John, you're going to become our de facto go-to ace on Shanghai, because, well, frankly, I don't know if anyone else has been there. So you're going to become that guy. So outstanding. Okay, so for listening today, we appreciate it. If you have any questions, again, reach out to John, and that's in our group. But again, for listening, we appreciate it. We hope we made you smile, laugh. We hope we educated you a little bit today on Shanghai Disney. And we'd like to wish you a great day.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. It was good to talk to you, Chris, about Shanghai and share some of the experiences.
All right, guys.